supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to this special edition of Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb. I'm Larry Roebling. You've heard a lot about William Shakespeare lately. It's his 400th anniversary this year. In that spirit, Dr. Dan thought it was time to once again put a Shakespeare character on the couch for some therapy. Yes, it's all in good fun, but also an interesting look into the psychology of these enduring characters. So, Dr. Dan, to turn the tables on you, how did you feel taking on psychotherapy of Shakespeare's characters?
To be honest, I was terrified because, in principle, the idea sounds great, but Shakespeare and I didn't get along all that well in school. I don't think we understood each other. I mean, I certainly didn't understand him. So I muddled through, but when I started reading him now, I got excited. I mean, we did Iago, one of the most evil characters in all of literature, a few years ago, and I was excited. I never met evil, and I wanted to see what evil was and whether it existed.
Speaking of evil, here we have Shakespeare's characters, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, and you decided to invite them to marriage counseling. So this isn't any couple. They are murderers, and one was driven to suicide. What was your thought process pulling this all together?
Well, they're complicated people, aren't they? I mean, they're murderers, but, you know, they're tormented by what they've done. So they've got guilt. And if you've got guilt, you've got a moral compass. And if you have those two things, you're a human being. There's a beating heart under there. Now, what they've done is horrific. But who they are might be a very different story from what they've done.
When you had them in your counseling session, did you run this as you would pretty much any couple that would show up at your office?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, the first question or two, I was surprised by the answer because I asked them what I would ask any couple. You know, tell me the history of your marriage. Did you love each other? Do you love each other? And it was yes throughout. These are people who are very much in love. Boy, to watch them do that, demonstrate it, talk about it in role is very powerful.
We have to give credit to two fantastic actors here who were able to improv their characters throughout this whole session.
Oh, my. You know, I am not a theater critic or an acting critic. I really don't know much, but they were brilliant, brilliant actors and, you know, brilliant at improv, too. And they talked about this, Larry. They talked about the blending of their actor and who they were, you know, and they both said you can't separate it out.
Okay, in the words of the great bard, thereby hangs a tale. Let's listen in as Carmen Kahn, founder and artistic director of the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater, gives our event audience the cliff notes for Macbeth. And yep, if you care, spoiler alert.
It begins on a stormy heath in Scotland, where Macbeth has just led King Duncan's army to victory in battle and saved Scotland from invasion. Macbeth and his brother-in-arms, Banquo, meet with three witches who predict that Macbeth will become king.
Witches, predictions, cue ominous music.
Macbeth and Lady Macbeth then take fate into their own hands and they decide that they're going to murder the king, which they do.
Sound like a familiar plot? Think House of Cards, a little Game of Thrones. So who is this guy, Macbeth? The Dr. Dan wants to get on the therapist's couch.
He fears everyone and has anyone killed who threatens his throne. Banquo's ghost appears to Macbeth at a banquet covered in blood, and Macbeth slowly slips into paranoia and madness, Lady Macbeth realizes that she's lost her husband and can never be relieved of the guilt of the murder and kills herself. Macbeth goes to battle against Duncan's son Malcolm and his old friend Macduff, and then is killed by Macduff, and Malcolm becomes king. That's Macbeth in a nutshell.
That's the gist. Now let's meet the Macbeths as they perform a couple of scenes before Dr. Dan invites them into his therapy session.
I'd like to introduce to you the two actors who are performing a couple of scenes today. Annabelle Capper is going to be our Lady Macbeth, and Rob Kahn is Macbeth. The first scene being performed takes place in King Duncan's castle in Forres in Scotland. It occurs minutes after King Duncan has been murdered by Macbeth, and he's soaked in blood, and he returns to Lady Macbeth, who's been waiting for him anxiously.
I have done the deed. Didst thou not hear a noise?
I heard the owl scream and the crickets cry. Did you not speak?
When?
Now.
As I descended?
I...
Hark! Who lies at second chamber?
Don Obain.
This is a sorry sight.
A foolish thought to say, a sorry sight.
As one did laugh and sleep, and one cried murder, that they did wake each other. I stood and heard them. But they did say their prayers and address them again to sleep.
There are two lodged together.
One cried, God bless us, and amen the others. They'd seen me with these hangman's hands. Listening their fear, I could not say amen when they did say God bless us.
Consider it not so deeply.
But wherefore could I not pronounce amen? I had most need of blessing and amen stuck in my throat.
These deeds must not be thought after these ways, so it will make us mad.
Methought I heard a voice cry, sleep no more. Macbeth does murder sleep. The innocent sleep. Sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve of care. The death of each day's life, sore labor's bath. Balm of hurt minds, great nature's second course, chief nourisher in life's feast.
What do you mean?
Still it cried, sleep no more to all the house. Glamis hath murdered sleep, and therefore Cawdor shall sleep no more. Macbeth shall sleep no more.
Who was it that thus cried? Why, worthy thane, you do unbend your noble strength to think so brain-sickly of things. Go, get some water, and wash this filthy witness from your hand. Why did you bring these daggers from the place? They must lie there. Go, carry them, and smear the sleepy grooms with blood.
I'll go no more. I am afraid to think what I have done. Look on again, I dare not.
Infirm of purpose. Give me the daggers. The sleeping and the dead are but as pictures. 'Tis the eye of childhood that fears a painted devil. If he do bleed, I'll gild the faces of the grooms withal, for it must seem their guilt.
Whence is that knocking? How is it with me when every noise appalls me? What hands are here? They pluck out mine eyes. Will all great Neptune's ocean wash this blood clean from my hand? No. This my hand will rather the multitudinous seas incarnadine, making the green one red.
My hands are of your color, but I shame to wear a heart so white. I hear a knocking at the south entry. Retire we to our chamber. A little water clears us of this deed. How easy is it then? Your constancy has left you unattended. Hark, more knocking. Get on your nightgown, lest occasion call us and show us to be watchers. Be not lost so poorly in your thoughts.
To know my deed, 'twere best not know myself. Wake Duncan with thy knocking. I would thou couldst.
They murder their father figure out of what's considered a blind thirst for power. The word blind is critical here. You're losing part of your senses when you're blind. So that's how we learned about them and who they are. And you see throughout the process, they both struggle within themselves, they struggle with each other. Is that struggle just about a fear of getting caught? Is it working towards more courage? Or could it be the whispers of a moral compass inside? So it raises a question in my mind. Who are these people? Beyond their words, and beyond their deeds. So, for anyone just joining us, this is a Shakespeare on the couch event. Well, really, Macbeth on the couch event. We're here with Rob Kahn and Annabelle Capper from the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater. After this next brief scene, where Macbeth and Lady Macbeth have become King and Queen of Scotland, and we'll see how they have a very different reaction to the death of the king. After this scene, they're going to join me in my office for a psychotherapy session.
Nought's had, all spent, where our desire is got without content. To safer to be that which we destroy than by destruction dwell in doubtful joy. And now, my lord, why do you keep alone? Of sorriest fancies your companions making, using those thoughts which should indeed have died with them they think on. Things without all remedy should be done without regard. What's done is done.
We have scorched the snake, not killed it. Should close and be herself, whilst our poor Malice remains in danger of her former truth. But let the frame of things disjoint. Both the worlds suffer ere we will eat our meal in fear and sleep in the affliction of these terrible dreams that shake us nightly. Better be with the dead, whom we, to gain our peace, have sent to peace, than on the torture of the mind to lie in restless ecstasy. Duncan is in his grave. After life's fitful fever, he sleeps well. Treason has done his worst. Nor steel, nor poison, malice domestic, foreign levy, nothing can touch him further.
Come on, gentle my lord. Sleek o'er your rugged looks. Be bright and jovial among your guests tonight.
So shall I, love, and so I pray be you. Let thy remembrance apply to Banquo. Present him, eminence, both with eye and tongue. Unsafe the while that we must lave our honors in these flattering streams and make our faces vizards to our hearts, disguising what they are.
You must leave this.
Oh, full of scorpions is my mind, dear wife. Thou knowest that Banquo and his fleance lives.
But in them nature's copies not eternal.
There's comfort yet, they are assailable. Then be thou jocund. Ere the bat hath flown his cloistered flight, ere to black Hecate summons the shard-born beetle with his drowsy hums hath rung night's yawning peal, there shall be done a deed of dreadful note.
What's to be done?
Be innocent of the knowledge, dearest Chuck, till thou applaud the deed.
Macbeth decides he must kill his brother in arms, Banquo. He must destroy anyone, everyone, who's a threat to him. The more people he kills, the more people he fears. See, the more myopic his world view, the more isolated he feels. It's only human.
And so ends Act One of our little drama. You're listening to Macbeth on the Couch, an event that was recorded live at WHYY with the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater. Coming up after this short break, Dr. Dan invites Macbeth and Lady Macbeth into his office for a marriage counseling session. What will be revealed about these two guilt-ridden, driven individuals? I'm Larry Roebling. Stay tuned. Welcome back to this special edition of Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb. I'm Larry Roebling. Today, Dr. Dan has invited Macbeth and Lady Macbeth into his office for a marriage counseling session. Our two actors, Rob Kahn and Annabelle Capper, remain in character and improvise on their relationship's tangled motivations to make Macbeth king.
So let's begin by the same question I ask any couple. Why did you marry each other? What was it in the other person, Lady Macbeth?
Because I loved him profoundly. Loved him from the moment that I met him.
How did you experience that love? Not why did you love him, but how did you feel it in your body?
I felt it in my stomach, restlessness, extreme restlessness. And he invaded my dreams from the moment that I met him. So it was a physical sensation, like I had no choice in the matter. It wasn't a decision. It just fell upon me like a calling.
Tell me about the evolution of that love over the course of your marriage.
He's been very strong and understanding when I've been weak. I'm sure that's been difficult for him, where I have failed him and hating myself for failing him. But he's always been very kind when I haven't been kind to myself.
Macbeth, you're shaking your head when she said that. You had some discomfort.
Not discomfort. I think she's stronger than she gives herself credit for. She's been my foundation more than she probably gives herself credit for.
So throughout the marriage, you have loved each other dearly, it sounds like. Am I understanding?
I believe so.
Yes, very much so.
Good. Okay. Macbeth, I want to talk to you about your rage. When you met the three prophetic witches, you said the rage you'd had even before then. How long have you had this rage inside?
If you're a soldier, you have to, it has to be there. You have to call upon it. You can't not be a fighter and not be able to somehow call upon that when necessary.
Did you have the rage before you went to war, or did it begin there?
Sometimes, yes. I think. I don't like to talk about my childhood.
Why?
It was lonely to a degree. It was regimented. It was compartmentalized. It's why I make such a good soldier.
You're saying what it was. What was it missing for you?
A female. I did not have a mother growing up. I grew up around men. And I think it's one of the things that attracted me so much to her, was that I had somebody that was not me, that was unknown, that brought things out in me that I had never known I had in me.
What?
The ability to see beauty, to have something that I could care for and nurture. I had never had that.
What about your father? What was that relationship like?
Very, very military. My father was a general. I am a general. I respected him. I honored him. He helped me. It was because of him and her father that we met, so I can at least thank him for that.
Macbeth, with all due respect, sir, when I asked how you felt about him, you went on to describe him. Can I ask you again? If it's too difficult, you don't have to answer.
I'd rather not answer it right now.
Okay. Can I ask you a different kind of question? The king, Duncan. How did you feel about that man?
I had a bond with Duncan and with Banquo and the other men that were the generals that I served with. That is something that can never be broken. Even now, I loved him.
Yeah, there was certainly no doubt in my mind. I want to switch gears for a minute. Thank you, Macbeth, for your openness. I know it was difficult. Lady Macbeth, this hunger for power that you bring into this story, where was that born?
I don't really think of it as power. I think of it as purpose and meaning. I think a life without purpose and meaning is a life not worth knowing.
So describe your purpose, meaning.
My purpose is to elevate my husband, to elevate our union to the highest place that it can be. I think I do that emotionally. I always try to give him that in our love, but I want to see him in the highest position he can be in, and I want to be the woman on his arm in that position.
Can I ask about Duncan, the king? How did you feel about him? Why did you decide to kill him?
Well, it's almost like the moment I fell in love with my husband, that wasn't a decision. It came to me like a calling. And this moment, this opportunity, this happening, this chance came to me also like a calling, spiritually and metaphysically and actually, and I took it.
So it seemed out of your control.
It felt like a calling. It felt it had rightness. It had rightness. The news that my husband had given me, the prophecy that had been given to him, I really felt like the person to channel that for him.
Macbeth, why did you decide to kill him?
Strategy. Plain and simple.
I'd like to challenge that plain and simple phrase. Something awakened in both of you after he was dead. This overwhelming guilt, turmoil, the murder of sleep. Blood you'll never get off your hands? Not simple. What happened? What was that moment? We'll start with you, Macbeth. What was that moment? Was there a part of you that woke up and realized?
If seeing and hearing visions is waking up, then that's what happened.
What do you mean?
Until the deed actually had taken place, it was very plain and simple.
And then?
An inundation of consequences? I don't know another way to put it. I have not slept. I have been hearing voices. I have been seeing visions.
What happened to you in that moment? Something changed in a flash.
I watched the life drain out of my friend's eyes.
It's painful.
Pain is relative. It's what you have to do as a soldier. You have to bury it.
Like Lady Macbeth. That didn't work very well. You went mad anyway. You were unable to bury them.
I lost everything. I lost my husband in a way that I have never experienced before. He fell away from me. And it brought back a lot of my old behaviors and thinking patterns that I've worked very hard to cure.
Like what?
My obsessive thinking, my compulsiveness, my anxiety.
Macbeth, I watch you as Lady Macbeth is talking and your eyes well up with tears. What am I seeing?
I miss my wife. Miss what we once had. And I just think we got to a place where we could never get that back.
So let's end the session here, and let's all three of us talk about what this has been like for us. Lady Macbeth, do you want to begin. We're in character here.
It's amazing to hear him speak so openly. It's not always the case. Sometimes it's hard to get him to open up to me, to talk to me. When he wants to be alone, when he doesn't want to communicate, and I'm left wondering what's actually in his head, that's very frightening for me. But I really just feel heartbroken that we are so far away from each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Heartbroken. Now. Heartbroken. Yeah. Macbeth, what's this been like, this conversation?
Incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah, it showed.
I don't like talking about feelings. I don't. I'd rather do something than talk about it. I'm a strategist. That's what we do. We make a plan and then we execute it. And if it's just talk for talk, it just makes me uncomfortable.
Macbeth, the language of psychotherapy, the direction we go, is something that was wonderful for Lady Macbeth. You know, someone once told me what a woman really wants is to see a man without his mask. And you had that opportunity today, Lady Macbeth. I am so sorry, Macbeth, that it was so uncomfortable for you. That was never my intent.
If it helped my wife, I don't mind.
So, finally, I'd like to say a word or two about my experience. I think, Lady Macbeth, the last word you used was heartbroken. And that's how I feel. Heartbroken for your suffering. I feel helpless. And I have seen and felt the depth and breadth of your suffering. It sounds like we're all heartbroken. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Macbeth on the Couch, a Voices in the Family special event that was recorded live at WHYY with the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater. Coming up next, our actors Annabelle Capper and Rob Kahn break character and discuss how the session has given them insight into their roles of Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. Plus, we hear from our audience. I'm Larry Roebling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Larry Roebling. This is a special edition of Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb. Every so often, Dr. Dan pairs up with the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater for what we call Shakespeare on the Couch. Dr. Dan creates a counseling session with some of Shakespeare's most evil, or shall we withhold judgment and just call them interesting or tormented characters. He has just seen Macbeth and Lady Macbeth in a marriage counseling session. Our actors Rob Kahn and Annabelle Capper now step into their own skins and examine how the session added to their understanding of their characters.
If you are connected to your character, which I hope I am as Lady Macbeth, and I know Rob is as Macbeth, you can't really separate the personal from this imagined creative character. You're bringing yourself to the part. You're bringing your own experiences, your relationships, your history, your family, your very being to it. So they do merge. So even though it was a session in character, it didn't really feel, you know, performed. It felt very authentic, quite moving at times, actually, particularly listening to him, my husband, talk about things.
Again, we kind of bring as much of ourselves as we can find within a character, and then you're meshing it with, you know, the things that are, you know, I'm not a murderer, so you're kind of taking what your life and instilling it in with this character. And it's easy for Rob to disconnect that idea that, oh, that moment where the blade went into his neck and hearing the sons wake up and the disembodied voice that's telling him what he's hearing and everything. But I think that's the first time that I really was forced to visualize that to such a degree. And that's going to make that scene really tough for me from now on. Thank you. But it should be, and so that's a really good thing. But it made it really personal. It really focused that, pinpoint focused that.
I want to ask the audience by show of hands, when he said he wasn't a murderer, how many of you believed him? I'm a little scared now.
Yeah.
A few people raised their hands. I felt very protective of you, Rob, and I just didn't know how to make this safer for you. I just didn't know.
I'm not sure. I mean, we had a little bit of discussion about there are men and women that come off the battlefields that are going through this kind of thing and that don't know how to talk about it and don't know how to open up and don't know how to work through what has happened.
That's part of the reason you have had PTSD.
Yeah, I have to think so.
We saw it here in the session, clear evidence of it in the session. You couldn't open up. You were scared to see what was in there. You know, this impulsive rage.
And honestly, that's not even a choice I made. I didn't set out to go, well, he's got PTSD, and so if that's the case, everything else follows along. As soon as that murder happens, the brakes are cut and we are on this juggernaut and there's no stopping it. All we are left with is experiencing it as it smacks us in the face. And I think that's why they both, the decline is so rapid.
And yet, there are two humans in there who love each other and who do have a moral compass. You wouldn't have died if you didn't have one.
Hmm.
It's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. I guess that's just my strongest reaction. I could tell you were more comfortable, Lady Macbeth, but my strongest reaction was wanting so to make this safer for you, and I knew I wasn't going to get there. And I was trying to learn about you without being intrusive. I didn't want to dig in. Even that language is not what this is about. It's not about digging. It's about holding and revealing, you know? I just couldn't get there. I didn't know how.
Hmm.
So we were both struggling, pal.
Yeah.
So let's turn to the audience. I would imagine there's somebody here that might have a comment.
My question is for Annabelle. When you were first speaking at the beginning of the session, you said you felt you, as Lady Macbeth, had failed your husband, and I was wondering where that came from, because I've read a couple of theories by Shakespearean scholars that said Lady Macbeth had a miscarriage, so I was wondering if it came from something like that, or if you had another reason for using those words.
That's very astute of you. I do feel that I have failed my husband in not providing him with an heir or any children. We lost a child, and he is the only one of all of his comrades and friends without children. Banquo and Macduff both have children. They will live on. And I feel that I failed him as a wife in that way. So, yes, it was through not bearing an heir, an ancestor, a line, lineage.
I want to ask a question, then I have a comment. Macbeth, would you have killed Macduff without your wife's influence?
Yes.
Because my experience is that a lot of violence comes because of the relationship that people have, that one influences the other, and he would not have done it by himself without the consent, the encouragement, and the approval of his loved one.
I think consent, encouragement, and approval is part of it, but he is a strategist. You don't just run into a battle. You make sure that you've got your back covered. You make sure that you've got contingency plans. And had I had longer to think about it, I would have come up with that plan. It would have happened. It was just when and how. And she gave me a when and how.
You're not going to be shocked when I say this, but the questioner also happens to be a psychiatrist.
Two parts to this. I may be related, I'm not sure. You made a statement, Dan, that about the suicide, which is an end to suffering, not an end to herself. Is that always, in your estimation, what suicide is? Is it always an end to suffering, or is there any other reason?
The word always scares me. Sure.
There are other.
We know suicides where people are just done with life. They're just done. And it's not a byproduct of depression or, quote, insanity. You know, they're just done. People who've been ill for so long. And I want to challenge, now that you mention this, I want to challenge something you said. I asked Lady Macbeth, I asked you, did you want to kill your suffering? And you said no, that you did it because you were isolated, that you lost your husband. That's suffering. That's suffering. But your body feels it the same way. It is an unbearable emotion. So I don't know if I answered your question, but thank you for asking it.
A question, a thank you, actually. In working with PTSD, recently returning Iraq and Afghanistan vets who have this rage, this homicidal, obsessive thoughts, they've brought back. I've always been frightened, so I rely on techniques, approaches of treating PTSD, but you really helped me get in touch with understanding my fear of the rage that it would take to murder, and then to be able to see someone compassionately and help their suffering at the same time. So I guess I wanted to thank you, for all of you, for highlighting the dilemma that I experience.
No shock here, but the questioner is a psychologist.
Sorry about that.
So many psychologists here.
I was going to say.
Are there any people that aren't psychologists here? The whole audience.
It's a little scary, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
But that's great, though, that some insight was found.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
Yeah. I'm not a psychologist.
Next question.
How do you as an actor go from, and this is for both of you, go from being you're loyal, you're a good friend, to murdering your good friend?
I don't know. I think every actor has kind of their own, you know, we study and we learn different methods, but I think when it really comes down to it, every actor sort of develops their own personal style. Their way of finding what they need in order to really connect with and go to places that you might not necessarily be able to go to easily. For me, I need to draw upon personal experience. For this role, Duncan, and even more so for Banquo, I lost my dad in November. So it's really easy for me to kind of connect to that loss with him. It's almost instantaneous if I need to just tap into that, because it's still a raw nerve for me. And just the idea that the unfortunate thing for Macbeth is that everything that happens leads to the next. As soon as he's done that first thing, you know, all we have to do is kill Duncan and then we're king and queen. Oh God, no. There are loose ends. And it's those loose ends that really are what bring him down, that what tear him down. I have to kill Banquo, and if I kill Banquo, that means I have to kill Fleance. I have to kill a child.
But on that note, you know, it must be recognized that we are starting with some of the most brilliant material you can ever be given
as an actor. I mean, this is the place where you start. You start with this text. And in terms of gifts to actors, there is no better place to start than the lines of William Shakespeare. I mean, it must be acknowledged in terms of his complete and utter brilliance, even without drawing on personal experience.
Yeah.
The writing steers you that way and takes you that way. Psychologically, poetically, all of this informs you so much. It's so brilliant, that psychological arc. I mean, I talk for you, I talk for myself. You know, you start here and then you end there, and he has given you that argument, that debate, that moral compass or lack of, whatever it is you need to get from A to B, he gives it to you. It's really your job as an actor to simply honour that, actually. You don't really need to embellish it. You just need to follow it. Even if you look at the scenes we just did from the moment of the killing, the punishment is instant. There isn't a second from the moment Macbeth commits the act of murder. The punishment begins. Macbeth doth murder sleep. Conscience, soul, everything is gone in that moment, and that is a testament, you know, to the writing. So in fact, it's such a gift, actually. You don't need to try too hard with Shakespeare. Only with worse writing do you need to, you know, fight a bit harder.
I'm an English teacher, so not a psychiatrist. But I do have a question about Shakespeare's text, because when Lady Macbeth is convincing Macbeth to kill Duncan, she says, "You would be so much more the man if you would do this for me." And I've always sort of, when I've thought about this and teaching this to students, talked a lot about the sexual tension in these moments and how she may have been using that. So I just wanted to ask you all where the sex might come in as she's working him over. So thank you.
And that comes from somebody who's not a psychologist?
English teachers are really close sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, again, you could say it falls down to interpretation. We now use the word manliness in this kind of macho way. So you're saying maybe sexual connotations. I don't see the manliness like that. I think a great deal of her appeals are to his valour, to his strength. We're talking about strength. He's a soldier. As we've established, I haven't ever quite read it, although I have seen it portrayed that way many, many, many times, that it's, if you do this for me, we're going to have a great time in the bedroom tonight. You know, and yes, it can be portrayed in that way. It's sexual. You're a man. You're going to be even more of a man, but valour, upstanding, respect, accolades, this warrior before me, I really have always seen it as a kind of either skewering of his strength, and even his strength in our relationship, or his strength as he stands by himself as a man. I think these things are deeply important to Macbeth. So to actually suggest that he will be less of a man, less of a soldier, have less valour, less respect, be seen in a smaller way in the eyes of me or anyone else, I think that's the place that would potentially hurt him the most. But again, it's interpretation. So manliness can be, you know, delivered, interpreted, felt in many different ways. But for me, it's not necessarily sexual.
What's it like for you, Rob Macbeth, when she says that?
I feel the same way, because something about marring his reputation or his idea of how he feels about his self-esteem is way more of a cut than one night of physical pleasure. I mean, that's way more of a pulling the rug out from somebody. So I definitely concur.
I have a question about the three witches. I never saw them really as a character, like in reality, that he saw. I kind of felt like it's the three personalities, that id, ego, and superego, which the id is like the instinct, ego is the reality, and superego is deciphering what's right from wrong. Part of me feels like the three witches really was all inside his head. It's kind of connected to the question before if Lady Macbeth really influenced him to kill him, or was it really the witches really inside his head?
I think within the context of the play, I have to see them as three actual beings that are imparting information onto me. One of the things that I love about our production is that it is not some high concept. It is mm-hmm. set in the time period, in an age when the battle between the supernatural, pagan, Christianity was kind of back and forth like this. And then you could get into the whole historical end of it about King James and his love of the occult and you know, all of that. What I loved about this is that I have just been told by three oracles I am going to be king.
So if you didn't see the oracle or you didn't hear them say, are you going to do the same plan? Are you still going to kill?
But we do. So we could debate what if he didn't, but he does. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's going back to, that's right back to the text. This is what he's given us, yeah.
Final question?
Yes, so my question is for you, Dr. Dan. Like, in real life situations where maybe you're speaking to people who've done something horrible, aside from professionalism, how do you keep yourself from being too disgusted? While you're talking to these people about what they've done, maybe with couples to each other or to other people, how do you keep it going and find a way to, you know, speak to this person and work with them through their problem?
That actually, one time in my career, I was unable to work with a person. It's a man that was drunk, killed a child while he was driving. By some quirk in the law, he got away with it. And he's sitting in my office in a lounge chair with his feet up. And as he's telling the story, with no guilt at all, and I see his foot rocking back and forth, and I look down at my foot that will never rock, and I said, I can't treat you. You're going to have to go. But other than that, the answer is, you saw what I do. You know, these people are murderers. And my job as a therapist is to find the humanity in the people I'm making eye contact with and to sit with my fellow humans. It's not about the behavior. It's about the heart. That's easy to sit with, and it's an honor.
Could I add something to that quickly? Because I don't think it's dissimilar to what you are required to do as an actor, actually. I mean, as we've established, Rob is playing a murderer, essentially. So while you treat, say, murderers, disgusting, morally lost people, it is your job to listen to their humanity, but I think it's an actor's job to find the humanity, because we're often asked to portray disgusting, awful, terrible, dark people, but to set aside your own judgment and find the beating heart, as you said, is also our work.
Well, the thing I wanted most as we conclude is to find your beating hearts, Lady Macbeth and Macbeth, to find the tenderness inside. Yours, Lady Macbeth, was totally accessible. Macbeth, I could see it in your eyes. I could see it when the tears appeared in your eyes. There's your humanity. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you both for coming in, for doing this, for opening up in the way you have. I think I have benefited. I think everybody in the room has benefited, and I sincerely thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a Voices in the Family special with Dr. Dan Gottlieb and was taped before a live audience at WHYY. Many thanks to Carmen Kahn, founder and artistic executive director of the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater, and our two stellar actors, Rob Kahn and Annabelle Capper. Fabian Obispo is composer and sound director for the Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater and created our music for this hour. If you'd like to be a part of our live audience at our next taping, keep an eye on the WHYY events page for more information. And look for Dr. Dan on Twitter at Voices in the Fam. The engineers for today's show were Bob Alls and Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of WHYY audio content. Mike and Scott is Voices executive producer. I'm Larry Roebling, producer of Voices in the Family.